Almost, or since it was a midterm, we're kind of a little lag. Is that the case? Okay, I'm seeing some nods. Okay, so let's leave it for now, and I'll add Martin Como's, let's say, on Sunday. Noach, you want to do the honors? So again, we're in the middle of, let's just go quickly again. Back to where we were. We started discussing, before we do that, I just wanted to mention a couple of horos that I'm not going to discuss right now, but I want to discuss on Sunday. But I just want to get more deeply into the topic first. But just that were brought to my attention, so I'll discuss them maybe when we start on Sunday. Gavi had a very good ha'ara about Mila Bismana, Mila Shalob Bismana, wondering whether or not the question of Mitoch, and maybe by extension issues of Tashvisu, would it matter whether, for example, if we're talking about Mila Shalob Bismana, whether it was Mila Shalob Bismana because of Sakana or because of Pshia? In other words, whether the Efshar Nibayon is something that, really should have been, or it's more of an abstract, like in better circumstances. So I want to talk briefly about that. I think it's a really good ha'ara. Thank you, Gali. And my comment back to him, Bichsav, was that it's interesting that the Tshuva Sarajba, invokes Efshar Nibayon, not the Rajba himself, but the Be'er that he's quoting, while the Ritva, just leaves it at Mila Bismana and Mila Shalob Bismana. But this, I think, is a very interesting question. That's one. Number two, Matan brought to my attention, also I want to discuss just a little more, again, in connection, especially with the comparison or the equation to Mila Bismana and Mila Shalob Bismana, the Diuk in the Rambam, Gimel 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 Ches. What about Yontav Sheni Shel Galim? What is the Rambam's view? Is there a din of Kofel of a Sakli as opposed to Srefa on Yontav Sheni? It may sound like in Rambam, but it's only Yontav Rishon, which is limited. And that's an interesting or curious issue because the Rambam Paskins of Mila Shalob Bismana, right, is prohibited on Yontav Sheni as well. So again, Rambam is not the one who made the comparison between the Mila Bismana, Mila Shalob Bismana, and Tashbisu. But again, it's an interesting issue, so I want to just discuss that for a couple of minutes, hopefully on Sunday. And then the Natan also brought to my attention the Ran, right, the Ran in the name of the Ra'ah, and Shabbos of Chavdalid, whether there's a difference between Davrish HaKavuah, again, similar problem. Just again, if we're distinguishing between Mila Bismana and Mila Shalob Bismana, so in general, what about other dinim that are mitzvos shekavu alahem zman? It sounds like the Ra'ah thinks that even if it's kavu alah zman, you would still treat it like Mila, right? Not done like Mila Shalob Bismana. So where does that leave Mila Bismana? Of course, it's clear that Mila Bismana is Doka Shabbos, Mila Bismana is Doka Yom Tov, but apparently it's not just because it's Davrish HaKavuah as well. That might be a special din in Mila. Actually, if you look at the Sugya and Shabbos, they're different Makoros, why Mila is Doka Shabbos. I think in one of our, I think a Vigdor was a Mila B'Shabbos. I think I spoke about this. I didn't expect any of you to have been there. It would probably be a long time ago. But I spoke about that topic way back. It's ringing in my ears that I spoke about that. But there are different limudim as to, whether it's a special din in the kasher of os and bris between Mila and Shabbos, or it's a din in Kavuah L'Zman generally, or it's the koach of Mila to Bidoka. So it's interesting to weigh that in terms of Yom Tov, which obviously is more easily overridden than Shabbos typically, but you don't get the internal relationship of Shabbos and Mila, with Yom Tov. But either way, that mila might be unique, but how does that fit in, either way, with the issues that we were discussing, you know, about, you know, mitzvahs hayom. What about a mitzvah hayom, tafka hayom, but that isn't a din in Yom Tov specifically? You know, that's an interesting question. So I think that's kind of the pathway. So I want to just expand on those a little bit more, but I do want to get first, especially since we're late, and our time is limited, I want to get back to formulating some of the issues that are central in this Balyurasa. So go ahead, Noach, if you don't mind, just catch us up. I know we did it last time. But, what's that? Yeah. Okay. So the point of this, again, in running through the Shatavatarya, which we already did, is to identify some of the trends here and some of the potential central questions as well. So the first thing, of course, to note is that this Gemara highlights, you know, what is evident, you know, if you know, I guess, Torah Shebetzal. But, of course, that's no means, by no means, you know, a given. You know, some people, you know their psukim from the Gemaras. I have a cousin who once said that such an individual is actually referring to me at the time. Is an Am Oretz Medaraisa and a Tzurba Merabana. But fact that the Torah Shebichsav, the Torah, in a bunch of places, has so many psukim, you know, that it seems superfluous almost in formulating the dinam of Rabbi Matzai, of course, is food for thought. Like, why do we need so many psukim, and what do they signify? And while the Gemara here, you know, doesn't formulate it that way, that's certainly the effect of discussing these multiple psukim and, you know, what each one adds to the mix is, you know, for us, you know, to take note and to step back, you know, and to look at it in a bigger way, you know, and to wonder why there are so many psukim. And, of course, the Ika question is whether like it is, you know, always when you have this phenomenon, and that is, you know, the multiple psukim are to be megala more dinim, or if not to be megala dinim, you know, pratim, but maybe pratim, I guess one extreme is to say, to be megala pratim that are shared across, you know, this single integrated, you know, category. And if not to be megala, as I say, dinim, then maybe by context or by language, you know, just to accentuate, you know, what this theme is really all about, or maybe there are, you know, it's a multi-dimensional concept or idea. But it's, I guess the extreme is, it still might be a single idea. And, you know, for whatever reason, the Torah, sometimes we can figure out, sometimes we can't, sometimes, you know, we can partially figure out, fathom, penetrate what's going on. But based on where it is and what the language is and so on and so forth, all these psukim, you know, together teach us, give us, inform us, you know, the requisite knowledge that's necessary in terms of applying it in a Bayramayimah, right? That's one possibility. And of course, the other possibility, and the other extreme, is that the multiple psukim represent multiple themes. Now again, how radically different they are, or whether they're overlapping. Because once you talk about multiple themes, what about nafkaminas? Right? And you know, how many themes, multiple themes, and how different are these themes from each other? And in addition to nafkaminas, right, the question of enumerating them or delineating them separately in the Minyantaya becomes an issue, possibly getting discrete onshin becomes an issue. All of that, you know, works much better if there are nafkamina, if there is independence in minyan mitzvahs. If there are multiple onshin, or it doesn't have to prove, but it certainly makes more likely that we're dealing with multiple mechabim. And the question is, like, how radically different, you know, are they? So even though this Gemara, let's say, is more specifically zeroing in on certain details, our task is to figure out whether it isn't about a much bigger question. Okay, that's number one. And number two, of course, is in the, you know, the details themselves. So when the Gemara says, Yochal Yatmin, you know, already this is, you know, significant food for thought. Like, where do we find in the world of halakha, you know, that if you're, you know, adept at covering up, you know, masking something, you know, keeping it out of sight, excuse me, that has substantive impact. Right, typically, you know, halakha mostly is about, you know, formal categories, you know, ownership, you know, rishus, some sort of a possession, you know, but actually visualizing, seeing an object, you know, that's a problem too. Typically that's, no, I wouldn't say never, but very rare, if ever. So the Gemara suggests here that Yochal Yatmin, right? That's very radical. And it points, certainly, if we're talking about just a visual connection, to a more, you know, personal or reactive or subjective, you know, gavra, you know, kind of a keshet. The more that we are going to demand something more objective, you know, then we're going to move away from something like Yochal Yatmin. And we're going to say that Yireh or Yira'eh or Yera'eh, we'll discuss those too, is about the capacity to be seen, and it's about presence rather than it is about, you know, being disturbed or disrupted, you know, by actually encountering, experiencing, seeing, you know, chametz. But since we already know that chametz is, you know, a highly, you know, unusual kind of an iser, and that part of that kind of is about the narrative, you know, we'll call it the secret Yisrael part, meaning the impact that it has, that its presence and the personal response to it has in this period of the year, you know, so we're not as shocked, you know, as we might be. The very fact, excuse me, that, you know, all of the, you know, discussions that we had about Isuzma, and all of the discussions that we had about Rabbi Shmuel, Shnei Dvarim, Mishusa Shalom, Masana Kasim, Kino Brishusa, right, the Kula parts and the Kuban parts especially, right, all of that make more likely the possibility that we're dealing with some sort of subjective response, right, to, or the disruption of the ambience, right, of Chag HaMatzos, you know, which is about, you know, focusing on matzah, you know, and rejecting chametz in both directions, as we discussed. So, you know, if we want to inject or introduce more subjective, you know, elements, like, do you see it? You know, is it in your rishus? In that sense, even though they typically are outside of the more legal formal, you know, connections, you know, that typically apply in Isurim, we're not going to be shocked. But it then behooves us, right, to figure out halakha l'maisa, you know, what yes and what not. And conceptually, you know, the extent to which these havaminas are irrelevant. So, for example, you know, one havamina is, like, two, you know, also the kula and the chumra, but we're also not going to be shocked. Again, I'm going to short circuit this a little bit, shortcut it, if we're going to find these manifestations, right, in both directions, the kula and the chumra, because we've seen that already with regard to Yisur's mom, with regard to Rabbi Shmuel. Right, so why wouldn't we find, you know, why wouldn't we encounter it also on this question, this topic? So, for example, on one level, right, there seems to be a havamina that if a non-Jew, you know, would just walk into your rishus with chametz, you know, that would be a problem. When we say shalcha taroa yataroa shalchei v'shalgavoa, right, we're being told that. You know, that is not the case. That if a non-Jew, or if chametz shel hekdesh is in your rishus physically, and you see it, right, but you have no legal relationship to it, then you're good. You're exempt. Okay. But if not for the gzeres hakatzuv, we would have thought that some other person's ownership, you know, as long as either what, either you view it, or more likely it somehow enters into your airspace, your domain, that would be enough to violate by Rabbi Matzah. That seems very extreme. And we may have echoes of that, you know, in situations, we'll get that in a few minutes, when it's not Akum the Hekdesh. Like, let's say it's Yisrael Chavera. Let's say Yisrael Chavera, who owns chametz, walks into your rishus. Right, is it possible that you will violate Bal Yeruah because he's walking in with his chametz? But that seems very extreme. But we thought it, if not the Gzeres HaKasuv of Akum and Hekdesh, and maybe Akum and Hekdesh are unique, something which we've seen already and we'll have to get back to. We'll get back to in a minute, just a little more. On the other hand, the possibility that you could have your own comments in your rishos, but if it's, you know, tamu, if you're not encountering it, you know, that somehow your ownership and its physical presence in your rishos and legal presence in your rishos is insufficient to make you chayav. That's a totally opposite, that's a parallel opposite issue. Right? That's a huge, huge kula, right? But it too kind of puts the weight or the burden of Bayiruah on how you respond or the visual response to the presence of the chametz. Okay? And that is a very remarkable thing. Okay, so that's the you know, just what Noach. You know, I've just read a couple of lines and look, quite a good job he did, where there's already so much to talk about, right? So that's right? And then Tziyachol Yatmi. What is it, Kabbal Pikdonos from the Nakri? What's that? Meaning you receive, you accept, you later on the Gemara is going to say that we're talking about Kabbalah Sacharis. Is that such a big kiddush? If you're Mekabel, there's the violence of the non-Jew, but you're Mekabel pictomas. So you would think that that would be potter. Even though you're chayim achras. Let's assume that's what it means. That's what the Gemara is going to say later on. So the Gemara thought that Kabbalah, so the Gemara thinks that Kabbalah Sachrayas Min HaNachri has no impact because it's Min HaNachri. It's hard to know how much of a Chiddush that is. Maybe it depends on what the real story is in Yisrael. And we can't pin that down because we just don't know. At this point, did the Gemara think that you would violate if you were Mekabel Achrayas on Pikdono Shel Yisrael? But that the Ptur Akum and the Ptur Hekdesh would eliminate Kabbalah Achrayas for those categories? Because that would be Mechudash. If the Gemara only thought that Bal Yiroa depends on Bailus, and that all Kabbalah Achrayas is irrelevant, right? That is not as much of a Chiddush. Or maybe that's not a Chiddush at all. Maybe the Chiddush is in the other direction, or maybe it's an open question. Namely, what happens if you're not the owner, but you have a quasi-legal relationship with the object? And then, of course, the question of how much Achrayas and how you assess the different levels becomes a question. We'll get to that. Okay. Interesting that the Rambam, when he quotes over this Gemara, somewhat it's fascinating the Rambam quotes over the Gemara, you know, very extensively in Perek Dalet of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, doesn't so much emphasize a Kabbalah picked on this, but in the other direction. Right? Josh, you talk about? Yeah, which is curious. It's a, I was taken by this. The Nafraku part. Namely, go say, Josh, go ahead, you have the language?
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's just dollar dollar. It's me no ifkita. Correct. So wait. So this is sounds like our Gemara. By the way, I do think it's very important that the Rambam, you know, writes over our Gemara. And again, this is something I've mentioned in the past. It's a Parshanut Rambam issue, meaning the Rambam typically is pretty. When does the Rambam decide to be succinct? You know, and in his code of law, you know, which is intended to be, you know, very succinct, you know, it's part of what he, you know, is motivated to accomplish, according to his Akhtar. You know, when does he quote the Limudim, and even the Havaminas of the Gemara? And the answer is that typically he doesn't. That's what he's streamlining. That's why, you know, Yad HaChazaka looks like a massive work. It is a massive work. And the investment of effort and mental energy, you know, is just off the scales. However, you know, when we look at the Yad HaChazaka relative to Shas, you know, it's a succinct work, and it was intended to be, right? So, when does the Rambam, you know, editorially choose to reflect, you know, the Havaminas, the Shaklavatarias, you know, the Limudim, you know, and why not? And this is a Rambam exegesis or a Rambam interpretation or a Rambam methodological question. When the Rambam, you know, veers from the Psak, the simple Pshat or the Gemara, the Psak of the Gemara, or when the Rambam quotes, you know, Limudim that are not in the Gemara, then of course something is up. But can you blame the Rambam, or could you, you know, derive, you know, any significance from when the Rambam quotes the Gemara? So that, you know, that's a more subtle question. In my opinion, the answer is yes. Given his agenda, and stated agenda, and given you know, his general proclivity to streamline, whenever the Rambam chooses to be more specific, like to mention a case of the Gemara, to mention Hava Mina, you know, to elaborate very specifically, I would assume that Yesh Devarim Begar. Now, what the Rambam means to explain is that these Hava Minas, these Havas Amina, Hava Minas, are conceptually significant. And that the Shaka Vitarya, you know, needs to be looked at, you know, under a microscope, because it really reflects something very basic, core, maybe subtle, you know. So I just think the whole Rambam in Perek Daled and Sefer Mitzvot and so on, and the quotation of the Gemara here, is very, very important. And we'll get back to that. Obviously, I mean, I could, you know, say it now, and we'll get back to it. This is connected to the question of counting mitzvahs, or isurim in this case, and multiple minyan mitzvahs and multiple malkios. The more you think that this Gemara, again, like the first broad option, is just about, oh, there are multiple psukim, you know, and through properly understanding them and their interrelationship, you know, we have a better knowledge, we have a better aggregate information about the parameters of this din. But it's all one din, all one halakha. And these are all reasonable, let's say, gray area suggestions. I'm saying if it were so. And how do we conclude? You know, this one on that side and this one on that side. The more you look at it that way, right, the more insignificant the actual limudim become. What's important is the information, you know, that we derive from the process. And if you're writing a legal code and your goal is to streamline or to provide the information that is factually and conceptually necessary, then you could omit, just as you omit many other shakavataryas of the Gemara. And by the same token, you would also count one Isser, because it's the aggregate of all the psukim, frankly, that provides you the information, you know, that is common to this, you know, integrated single din. However, if you really think that the multiple psukim in the Torah are there to highlight the complexity of a particular and the character of a particular Isser, and especially if you think that they also go the next step, you know, are there to underscore that, you know, this complexity is diffused across more than one Isser, and there's more than one Mechayiv, even though I think the Mechayivim are likely somewhat connected. So then, you know, it's very possible that the location, that the language, that the Hava Minas that the Gemara associates with this pasuk or that pasuk are crucial, right, to highlighting that. And that's what I think the Rambam is doing. In other words, how many Isurim does the Rambam count? Two. Correct. The Rambam could have counted, we'll get back to this, how many could he have counted? He could have counted one, for sure. That's not what I meant right now, but 100%. And that would have been actually more consistent with what? With the Gemara, we'll get back to that. But with Gavi, what do you think?
perhaps with Tosos?
With what?
Tosos, maybe?
We'll get to Tosos. I do think you're right about Tosos, 100%. It would have been more consistent with Tosos' view. But I wasn't referring to Tosos. I wasn't thinking of that. What would have been more consistent with? When you speak about consistency, you know, we're talking usually internal, right? What would it have been more, this will make this a little louder, so everybody can. Yitzi, what would it have been more consistent with?
I'm not sure exactly. Maybe in terms of his, like, when he views Chometz also as like one.
Say again?
I'm not so sure, but maybe in terms of the way he views like Chometz in general as like a,
I don't know about that.
So super awesome. Shoresh Tess?
The what?
Shoresh Tess?
Excellent. Shoresh Tess. What's Shoresh Tess?
Raman talks about if you have multiple Isurim, then you only count one.
Correct. The Raman himself, in Shoresh Tess, addresses the broader methodological question, right, about minyan of mitzvos, and when you should count multiple or single Isur in a minyan taryag. If the Torah Shabbat has multiple references, what do you do? It sounds like, we'll discuss this more on Sunday, maybe. Sounds like there's a fundamental debate between the Rambam and the Ramban, right? David, on that issue. Namely, Ramban holds what? I mean, Rambam holds what? Let's start with the Rambam. That typically, you count one. Right? And there's Malkus only for one, and there's Minyan Mitzvos only for one. And what does Ramban typically hold? David?
I believe he says get multiple sets of Malkus.
Yeah, it sounds like you get even multiple ownership. Never mind Minyan Mitzvos. That's a very fundamental argument. So last year, when we were discussing the beginning of Chulam, right, we encountered this and we mentioned the example of Bayura, but we weren't discussing Bayura last year. Okay, what were we discussing? Yoni? Tomorrow, because the Gemara uses it, came up linguistically, but you know, we didn't want to lose an opportunity, right? So there are two psukim in Tomorrow. What are the two? Lo yachlifenu v'lo yamir. And they sound an awful lot like they're, I mean, they're certainly both referring to Tomorrow. You're not supposed to do Tomorrow. You're not supposed to try to swap out, you know, one korban, you know, a korban for another animal, replace it. And Torah says it in two different ways. Okay? And the Balei Tosas in the beginning of the Chulin have two deos, right? And Tosas and Tumura. Tosas and Tumura, Tosas and Chulin. Or two days, you get Malkus, the Gemara says Malkus Arbaim. You really get Malkus Arbaim, there are two psukim, you get Malkus Shmonim. So 2 days in Tosas, you know, Chanami, do you get Shmonim, or do you get Arbaim? By extension, the question is, do you count Tumura once or twice? Right? And if you do count it once, you know, which is the main one? So it's the same phenomenon. It's a parallel phenomenon. It's even a parallel phenomenon regarding things like, you know, Lavanita Klase. Do you apply Lavanita Klase when there are multiple Lavin but only a single Ase? Can one Ase, in other words, neutralize multiple Lavin if there are multiple Lavin? That's a big issue in Tumura, in the Gemara there, and so on. And it's relevant to, you know, the question of Lavanita Klase, presumably, for Chametz. Anyways, so last year we were discussing this question, and we were noting that Rav Belville, in his, stencils in Tumura, suggests that the Machlokas and Balei Tosas, whether you get double Malkus or not, You know, oh, it's parallels in the focus between the Rambam and Ramban in Sefer Mitzvos. Meaning it's a broad methodological question when you have a number of Torah Shabbat Sounds, that seem to be related to the same thing. But I was trying to suggest something a little different, certainly to the Rambam and others. And that is, again, and this also may be, there is a machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban, no question about it. There appear to be exceptions hinted at in the Rambam. If you read the Rambam carefully, we're not going to do this right now, it'll take too long. Maybe we follow up with this, finish this part of it on Sunday. But if you look at the Rambam in Shorash Tess, he alludes to the fact, seemingly, that there can be exceptions. And kind of the Ramban does too. In other words, even the Ramban will admit that sometimes multiple Isurim are just a way of expanding or providing additional information. Even the Rambam agrees that sometimes multiple Isurim aren't just a way of expanding details or Labar al-Bishnayim, kind of additional emphasis we discussed last year. Additional emphasis, can come from two opposite, motivations. Sometimes additional emphasis because something is very chamor, so you just keep repeating it. When you want to instruct your children or anybody else's, conduct, concerns you and you feel responsible for. So when do you keep repeating, the warnings? It can be for one of two reasons. Because the, issue is particularly significant, the consequences are particularly dire. So it's hard to say it only once. But every time you think about your responsibility, you're terrified that they're not going to take you seriously. Right? So you repeat it multiple times. It's an understandable phenomenon. Or it can be the opposite. Right? The infraction, is or is perceived, as being less significant. And therefore you're worried, that people won't take it seriously. So you have to, repeatedly accentuate it, because you just want them to know that it's really awesome. So these opposite reasons for lav or lav bishnayim, as reflecting either the chomer hadavar or the kal hadavar, but still trying to make sure that people take it seriously. This we find in Chazal, Dan and other things, and this concept of lav or lav bishnayim, lav or be'aseh v'lo sa'aseh, etc. For either of these opposite but kind of parallel reasons, is something that we have as well. So in a way, it sounds like that the Rambam and the Ramban and Sefer Mitzvot are discussing, if all things being equal, you don't have two lechayim, right? But you, for whatever reason, have double formulation of Torah Shabbat Tzav, what are you doing? Right? And the Rambam says, no, of course, it's very serious. You have to take it very seriously. But that doesn't affect me in the mitzvahs, and certainly our own shit. And the Ramban thinks that it does. That's an interesting argument about how you look at both Onshin and Minyan and Mitzvahs. Right? Sounds like the Rambam is a hardcore, it depends on the categories. And it sounds like the Ramban thinks that there are other uses, or methods for Onshin and for Minyan and Mitzvahs. More didactic, frankly. More pragmatic. However, this makes it particularly interesting that the Rambam, again, what does Rambam do with Tzmura, by the way? Yoni? He only counts once. Exactly. Even though I do think that he also was influenced by the double formulation, not just as a chumrah, But I think that he, my view on Tamura, which is not going to elaborate, but just a, you know, a little, you know, quick chazara for those over there, is I think the Rambam feels that there are two elements as a kind of reciprocal issue in Tamura, and that instead of being two different mechayvim, there are two sides of the same coin in their difference. In other words, there's one issue which is out of respect for something which is already a behemoth korban with kedusha, right? It's disrespectful to assume that that constitutes interchangeable parts. You can just, you know, swap it or switch it, you know, for something else. By the same token, the methodology of, let's say, initiating kedusha is something which is undercut. You know, when you do it, you know, just to get something else liberated from kedusha, if you will. But I think the Rambam felt, and said to the Chayvin, those are two sides of the same coin. They really have to do with chiluf kedusha itself. And I think it's a very wide tumura, such a where it is in the time, whatever, all the things that we discussed. Fine. Either way, the Rambam's view on not counting it twice, despite, you know, thinking that there are really kind of two elements to it, is certainly consistent with Shorish Tess and his general view. However, in light of that, the fact that the Rambam counts by Rabbi Matzeh twice becomes more significant. It's clearly an exception to Shorish Tess. So, what justifies or warrants that exception? It seems to be that the best explanation would be if the Rambam understood the multiple psukim and the multiple isurim represent the multiple b'chayim. Unlike, even more so than Tumah. So then it's the kind of alluded to exception, you know, from Shorish Tess, right, that I was referring to before. Because the truth is, in the end of the day, like, why would the Rambam be straitjacketed, or the Rambam, for that matter, be straitjacketed? Meaning, there can be more than one reason for multiple references. It can be emphasis, it can be differences that are still integratable, or two sides of the same coin, or whatever, or they share still enough in common. And there could be cases where multiple references imply multiple mechayim. So to have a debate about, you know, what happens, you know, when emphasis, accent, alone, whether that warrants discrete mention, discrete enumeration, minhag and mitzvot, separate onshin, that's one thing. But why be straitjacketed into thinking that that the Torah only repeats for one reason? I mean, in, you know, different Torah called Shem B'nei Adam, but it isn't just out of weakness here. It's like, of course there would always be multiple reasons, you know, for multiple references. And it makes total sense that you wouldn't just be obstinate and assume that it wouldn't be consequential from an intermittent suffering, maybe even for Onshin, but that you would apply, you know, different. Now again, you still have to, how do you know? So you look around the Gemara and you start looking for, like, how did the Gemara understand these multiple references? Right? So it's a combination of your global understanding of the Sukkahs, which is, of course, heavily contingent upon your reading of and your impression based on the reading of Gemaras. Again, it's, you know, it's hard to know when one begins and the other ends, and it's a lifelong kind of a, you know, evaluation. So what I'm trying to suggest here, basically, is that in light of Shorish Tess, and yet the fact that the Rambam is an exception, counts by Rabbi Matzeh separately, right? both in the Kotaret and in the body of Hilchos Chametz and in Sefer Mitzvos. And let me just add one other thing, and that is based on the question of some of the Farshim, including the Lech HaMishnah. What am I referring to? Noah? You see it? You get a chance to see it? Perek Aleph. Kyle? Namely? Yeah. The Lech HaMishnah. You have the language there? Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel. Is it Aleph Gimel? Yeah. It says, why did the Rambam count two? Maybe you should have counted three. It's a little strange that he wants to count four, but you know, Imkvar is Kvar. Go ahead, Josh.
He says,
it's good.
Imtomar Kevin de Seor Vechame, Kadim Belsi, Imkin Arba Olave Hab Seor, Lo Yimate, Lo Yuva Lecha Seor, Leir Lecha Chamez, Lecha Seor Achmina, Leir Hamras.
Okay. So again, we're going to go back. By the way, you should, if you haven't seen it already, I think I did say you should look at Beishama Bitzil and Beitza and the Rambam and the Raya and the Parakala Pokasanets. Again, I don't know how much we're going to go into right now. At some point, we'll go into more about the relationship between Chametz and. And Saor, as part of this at least. So, but the upshot is, Josh, how did you do that without a, echo?
What?
How did you do that without an echo, or you just have that power?
How did you do it without the echo?
How did you technologically do that without the echo?
I think we're close enough.
Oh, okay. Or maybe just have some powers or whatever. So, the reason I'm quoting the Lech HaMishnah, Lech HaMishnah says, listen, basically, Mimonashah. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying, right? If you're counting Pesukim, so there are more. And if you're not, then why count two? And he has two deos. Is it Saor and Chametz that you're counting? Is it Re'iyah and the Siyah that you're counting? Okay, in the end of the day, is, again, I think the question about three is stronger than the question about four. But anyways, in the end of the day, what's the upshot of the Lech HaMishnah? Josh, what would you say? What's the upshot? Whether it's Metzia and Re'iyah or Saor and Chametz, what's he struggling to say?
Is much more a function of Imate and Yirai per se than it is.
For sure, I'm saying. But what's the takeaway in terms of the methodological question and so on? Meaning, if you hold like Shorer's test, count one. If you hold like the Ramban and Shorer's test, count four. What's the answer? The answer to Shorish test is, as it's already alluded to, Shorish test is not a straitjacket. Right? Shorish test is, the general guidelines. I don't mean that just in, you can't anticipate every eventuality. Right? I mean that, of course, there are going to be different models of multiple references. So what the upshot is, let's say there are multiple references. Is it possible that some of the multiple references are for details or further accentuation, and others are for breaking down into different categories? Sure. So what the Rambam did in this particular case is terrific in a way. Right? He didn't just go by the number of psukim. He didn't say, when it comes to Bhairai, I'm with the Ramban. You know, anachronistically, of course. And he didn't, you know, just stick by his guns, you know, and say all multiples are the same. Because in Shorish Tassi said, typically default, multiples are accentuation. Doesn't mean all of them are. Okay, but by the same token, then if there's an exception, it doesn't have to be that there are four different concepts. Maybe already, you know, apprehended the conceptual discreteness with the two. By the way, does anybody count more than two? Benjamin? No, not sure. Can I ask Eitan, even though he's in Chassan? I mean, you've been busy. Anybody? No, if anybody counts more than two?
Everyone? Smack in the Iran.
Excellent. The smack in the Iran. Right? I specifically asked for the smack, but both here, the smack and the Iran, count three. Right? So, if my time's running out, if the Rambam, you know, breaks his rule, but he doesn't break it completely, right? So what's going on? That's exactly what's going on, right? Somebody who says it has to be all or nothing, even within a particular category. So the Rambam understood that some of them are details. And some of them are categories. Both of them are important. One second. Yeah. So, getting back to, so why does the Rambam feel the need to elaborate so much on the Kshakal Pari and the Gemara and Paragdala and the Sefer Mitzvahs? And more than that, we'll see, not now, but when we finish with this, we'll try to be Madaik a little more, you know, in terms of are there actually nafka mina, yes or no. But the answer, of course, is now, you know, obvious. Right? Yeah. Yoni? Since you're kind of quarterbacking this. Why do Ram feel the need to elaborate the Shaka Bataya here? Say again? Yeah, he's trying to show. Okay, he understands that the Shakavatari and the Gemara itself is highlighting different mechaidim. That's exactly the point. So Yachal Yatmin, again, his, you know, your Kabbal Pikdonos is, as we judge, right, Josh, again, is different than the Gemara's a little bit. It's interesting. Because the Gemara's is, can you be Mekabel Bachrayos Chemso Shel Nachri? And what's the Rambam's again? Can you give your comments to a non? Can you be mafkid your comments to a non-Jew? It's almost like, you know, matmin, right? You have the comments in your Rishos, but it is invisible, but invisible. I guess that sounds too out of sight. It sounds too like sci-fi to say it's invisible. It's cloaked. Cloaked? Yeah. We'll say out of sight or cloaked. Let's say you get it out of your wishes. But you didn't necessarily get it. You still remain the owner. Right? Maybe you can do that. That's an interesting question. Again, if you have two Yisraelim, as we know, that's a debate between the Gonim and Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rush and the Achronim. Right? Reuven has Bailos and Shimon has Achrayos. We'll get back to that. And Shimon has Achrayos. That's a debate. In the case of Akum, it's of course a little trickier because, you know, the Akum is not a competing you know, party to violate Bali law. So you might think, you know, he only is a Dabra Poter. So maybe I get it out of my Rishos. I'm still the owner, but it's not my Rishos. It's not even in a Rishos. It's not like I placed it in a Rishos of some other Jew for whom, you know, this is an issue or a problem. So it's just fascinating. That's, is that the way he read the Gemara, or he did it, was uncomfortable with the Havamina of the Gemara? Of course, Kabbalah Sakrayas, Shalakum, is going to be awesome. But is Kabbalah Sakrayas Ayideakum? Or just simply giving it to the Akum? Is that going to help you in any way? Okay. But either way, we'll continue with the Rambam later on. But the whole point is that these Havaminas, you know, may very well, you know, illustrate that there's a certain tension in the nature of Ayurveda. And maybe at the end of the day, instead of just saying Kamash Malam, you know, which is maybe what Tosis felt, that everything is the same, all the different references expand the integrated single, you know, lav or isur. You know, it means this is included, that's included, this is not included, the next thing is not included, etc. Maybe the Rambam's idea in quoting the Shakuntarya is to explain why this is not Shomer's test. To explain why this is a proper exception where you need to quote the multiple isur. Except there's a little bit of an issue in Rambam which makes it even more complicated. Namely, Josh? The Rambam himself, unlike some other Rishonim, which we'll get to, the Ritva, Rabbeinu David, who either themselves or quote others, who say, you know what, there aren't actually nafkaminas. Maybe Yatmin does sometimes work and sometimes not. And maybe, you know, other things, you know, work here and they don't work there. Right? So that would work well, even doesn't prove either. I'll get back to that. How do we explain that? Just those discrepancies. La halakha. Those echoes of the Havamina that are translated into the norm, the maskana. Maybe not exactly as you might have thought, because the Gemara precludes some of them, but maybe there's some gaps that remain and some nafkaminas. So La Yirai, La Yimatzai have different nafkamina. If you end up with that conclusion, let me just get that on the record, right? There are still two conclusions conceptually to derive. The more obvious one is, if they're an afkamina, we're dealing with different isur and different l'chaim. And that would certainly be a very good reason to be bonah more than once, to be manish even more than once, etc. So there are Rishonim and Achronim who think that there are. As they will see, the Ritva, Dayan Rabbeinu David, some of the Achronim, maybe even, you know, some of the earlier Rishonim. Is it mukhrach to say that? That if there are nafkamina that we're dealing with two isurim and two mechayvim? Noach, what do you think? Say again? I'm asking, if you hold lamaskana that there are nafkamina between the psukim, any of the psukim, yet sometimes you violate, let's say, law yura, and sometimes you violate lo yimatzeh. Okay? But you don't necessarily violate all of them or both of them in exactly the same way. Okay? We have to try to pin that down. Kulas, chumras, what are they? Does it work match with the words or the context? We'll get to that soon too. Connotation of yira is certainly different than lo yimatzeh. What about yeraha or yiraha? Less so, but does it matter whether the shalcha whether it's Shachar, Pesach, or Gvulcha, does it matter the order of the Pasuk? Whether the reference to the Gavra comes before the comments or after? I mean, all these things are possible. You know, and they're suggested. Just hard to know. Okay, but either way, if we assume, like some Rishonim hold, and we'll see the full scope of it going forward, that there are nafkamina, then the best explanation is that there's more than one mechana. Even then, you'll still want to try to understand, what do you mean more than one mechana? Radically more than one mechana, or subtly? Okay. Maybe one mechayiv is more about, let's just say it straight, more about how the gavra relates to chametz. And the other is about, objectively, you know, to what extent chametz is connected to him in a legal and formal way. Let's say one is more subjective and one is more objective. One is more about the gavra, the other is more about, let's say, the contamination of the reshus by the Chepta Shal Chametz. Okay? Now, even then, I don't think those things are completely unrelated. If it wasn't for Chametz's unique, singular status, everything we've been discussing, the Kula and the Chumra, then maybe these two, you know, wouldn't have enough in common. But, you know, it still accentuates that both of these are unacceptable. You can't have, you know, by behavior or by direct contact, a certain kind of relationship, right? Nor objectively should chametz be present, right, in your domain objectively either. Maybe instead of seeing them as two very different, they overlap a lot. They both have to do with relationship. Rotz of the Kiyuma, Tziruf Tudi. Just that one is more directly Rotz of the Kiyuma, or, you know, the impact of confronting or encountering comments during this period, and the other is more about formal and objective and not taking steps to banish, right, or again the corruption, contamination of your reshus, etc. Okay, is there another way to explain nafkamina which does not necessarily force you to conclude that there are two different lavin in minyan and mitzvos? Yes. That's what I'm asking. How?
That they're just two songs in the same play. Each pasuk represents some idea.
It's one idea. So how can there be discrepancies in how it's applied? Yeah, so that's what I would call like quantitative compensation. You know, in other words, and I totally agree with that, I think that's a good point. Meaning, typically when we see nafkamina, we assume different mechanic. But it doesn't have to be that way. And especially because of what we just said, which is that the common denominator, whether you focus on the gavra and his encounter with chametz on Pesach, or you're talking about more his preparation, or his reshus, or the chepsa shel chametz, you know, being present and corrupting. You know, you might say that both of these things are about rotz of kiyuma, just that one expresses itself in the experience, and the experience, and during the time period, and the other in the absence of foresight or preparation, and or, you know, in an objective, formal, or legal relationship. Like, I would be hard-pressed, frankly, to weigh in on, like, which of these, you know, is more compelling. I think they're equally compelling, but just very different ways. One on an experiential level, and the other more on a legal, formal level. There's something compelling about each of those. You know, so you might say that you could have a phenomenon in which you say, we count one Issa in Tara, and there's only one Onish as well. But there are still not Gemina, mainly let's say something like, you know, if you're Matsu, you know, big ruling, you know, then you're a potter. And, but if you're Matsu, Be'ezecha, you're a chayav. Or something, you know, along those lines. Let's say even Kabbalah Sakrayas, you know, is Kabbalah Sakrayas is Kaveh Alagami Gvul. Meaning, in the technical way of connecting or associating, you know, of your tziruf and your kesher to chametz, so there's like a quantitative compensation. You know, if you're not living here, then that's different. You know, there's a more intense obligation to eradicate the chametz from your domestic domain than from your far-flung, you know, financial empire, let's say. Or you know, places, I think, a little bit dramatic, but, you know, places that you rarely encounter. But of course, there's still that Easter, but maybe it matters, you know, maybe it's a combination of, you know, where the place is and how connected it is to you and how likely, you know, it is that you're going to confront it on Pesach. You know, and the intensity of its presence, or the legal formality of it, maybe this is compensation. By the same token, in the range, it's conceivable that there's no nafkamina whatsoever. But the fact that there are different psukim is sufficient to establish different mechayim. And maybe even sufficiently to justify discrete minyan and mitzvos, and maybe even multiple onshin. Although I think it could also be mechalek, by the way, between, you know, minyan and mitzvos and onshin. So then you might have shittas harana, which he accentuates the differences, even though he seems to come to the conviction, maybe based on his reading of the Gemara, unlike the more subtle reading of the Ritva, of the Dayan of Ben David, you know, of others, which is that while a lot of overlap is the consequence of these psukim, you know, there remain some gaps. Maybe the Rambam of the Gemara. Havamin is critical because it shows two different dimensions of Ba'irah. And that echoes, that resonates even the Matskana, Imbinin and Mitzvos, Onshin, etc. Even though the Maisa, there's no Nafkamina. Why is there no Nafkamina? Maybe because there is a certain impact of one Mechayim on the other. This is my personal theory. Namely, because these are not completely unrelated ideas, and they all share one common denominator in the sense of Chametz's relationship, you know, and presence vis-a-vis the Gavra on Pesach. So it's very possible that the way Rambam understood the Maskana of the Gemara was that the Kamashmalon, instead of being, you know, oh, you might have thought this, draw the line here, draw the line there. Kamash Malav, the integrated single idea, includes this, excludes that, across the board, etc., etc. Where the Rambam understood the Maskana is, there's a Havamina to make this distinction, and a Havamina to make that distinction. And that Havamina rules, meaning because it highlights different aspects, different dimensions of this Issa. Now it's true that Lemaisa and Maskana, our conclusion is that whatever applies to one applies to the other. But maybe that's because these categories are sufficiently flexible and fluid that they impact upon each other. So the one L'loi Ro'alecha, which focuses on the Gavra, says, you know what, at the end of the day, if you know that you own comments in your far-flung property, you know, and you're not going to encounter it, but just your awareness of it, and the fact that you did nothing to neutralize that, that too is a kind of lo yirah. And by the same token, even if legally and formally, right, there are gaps, you know, in all things being equal objectively, right, in what would have been a mechayev, a bailos, or a shos, etc., right, in the end of the day, because the reason we care about it is still related to your profile vis-a-vis your chametz, so then at the end of the day, you know, we expand the formal title, objective presence parts of chametz, precisely because there's an implied, you know, relationship here. So that anytime you violate, and I think this is what the Rambam says, we'll look at language more next time, but whenever you violate A, you also trigger B. Not because they're not different, but because despite their difference, right, there's still a common denominator, and therefore A expands B, B expands A. The result is that you have this interesting phenomenon where you should count more than one, you should count two. You might even get double malchus, if you can get malchus, right? At the same time, I don't have Geneva. But when you present all of this, you're going to want to present the halakhahs and the maskanas, because both are true. Okay? So that's what I think is going on. And we'll elaborate a little more as we go further. Let's continue in the Gemara. So we have all these avenues. We'll discuss, we'll get on the record the Ritva, Rabbeinu David, some of the others as well. Okay. Let's just get another couple of lines and then we'll stop. Go ahead. Yeah. So again, here this idea that that we might distinguish between nachri, two types of nachri, right? And then, as we discussed already previously in the previous year, we read that part of the Gemara, that the other Gemara flips. Okay, that part is important. But the Bali Tosis, two issues that the Bali Tosis raise that are relevant, that stand on their own, important questions, but that become, again, of greater consequence given our analysis. First one is Tosas Dibramasa, Avalataro Shalakem Shalavava. Noach, what's the issue there? Rav Yaakov Me'ar Leon, why do you need two psukim for Nachri and Hekdesh in some areas of Halacha? Right? Like, for example, Trumas Maestras, you know, possibly Chala, right? And when it comes to Chametz, it sounds like one Locha is strong enough to carry, you know, the miut of a Harem and Gama. Right? So what does Tosa say about that? First day of Tosis, the Tosis here kind of denies it in the end, right? Tosis says, no, look carefully in the Gemara Menachos. Miu, the star of the Duyakin, Garcina, Mechad, Kedea, Risasechem, Keshir, Isas, Midbar, Mechad, Isas, Hekdesh. Chinira, later on, Chulin, the Bereshit Sagez, Shina and Beari. So basically, Tosis is asking the question, and he's denying the facts. However, the Tosis revisits this question Noach where? In the next Tosfos. But very subtly. Okay, what's the next Tosfos about? Oh, you get to that one. Okay. That's fair enough. Stephen? You got it? No, you didn't see it yet? Okay, so let's go. We're going to stop here in a second. But Jacob? See it? Why do you have to say, why do you need a separate pasuk for? Quite well. For what? Yeah, I'm talking about the part of Nachri.
Yeah.
Yeah, the part of. Hikshar Venitam. Right? Yeah, Nachri is a Nachri. Who cares what the political relationship is? Right? That's a great question. It's a great discrepancy to point out. That's what the Bali Tosis do. That's what we hire them for, you know. That's their both questions. Right? Basically Tosis is asking Akasha. It's Akasha and he's a Teretz. But again, stand back. It's more than that, right? It's Tosis is saying, do the patterns that apply here in Bali Rabbi Matzei, are they consistent, do they cohere with the patterns in other areas, parallel areas of halakha? Right? So before we're talking about when the Torah has multiple psukim, how many do you count? How many onshin? That's one issue. Right? When the Rambam streamlines his psukim, how come sometimes he quotes the psukim and the havaminas? And sometimes he doesn't. Right? And even more so, how come the Rambam is defying his normal principles? And if he's defying his normal principles, im kvar az kvar, why isn't he showing any napkaminas? Or why isn't he counting four? Now, what I'm trying to show is there are questions. Every question is a good question, deserves an answer. But there are also patterns to questions. And the bigger issue is, how coherent are the issues in this sugya, right, with the normal patterns of halacha? So Tosfos is asking two more of these questions. How come here, Sholacher v'Shogavoa is one, and it's not, doesn't seem to be that way in other areas of halacha? Okay? That's the first Tosfos. Now the second question is, the opposite. How can you need two psukim here, but Nachrishiv Kivshasa Velo Kivshasa, but it doesn't seem like in parallel areas of halakha we require that? Okay? So I'm saying, why not look at the patterns? Instead of saying, you know, Tosis number one as a question, Tosis number two as a question. There are four questions, three questions, I don't know, on the Rambam. Right? Or the Rambam and the Rambam. Whatever it is. I'm saying there's a bigger, how is Chometz faring vis-a-vis other demon? Okay, so what is Tosis' answer?
Yes, this is the source for...
Excellent. The Tirtz Rajva, who's the Rajva? The Rashmi Shans. Talmud of Rabbi Yitam. Kivin the Gully, right? So good, this is the Makar. That's an answer. What's that answer mean? In bigger terms. It means there's no discrepancy. On the contrary, this is the Makar. Everything is the same. That's a possible solution. Right? And by the way, that was the first answer in Tosa's previous question too. Like, oh, if you look more carefully at the Svarim on the Duyakim, it's all parallel, it's all good. There, the answer was it's all parallel, it's all good. Here the answer is there's a discrepancy, but it's only apparent because this is the makor, you know, just speak more. This is the makor for everything else. Okay? But then you have, that's why I asked Noah, but he didn't get to the second dose, but it's fine. There's a line here, keep going. Oh. V'chein yesh l'taretz ma she'ikshar rav rabbi Yankov de Orleon, right? Be'arisa secha. He says, oh, Tosa says, oh, by the way, the answer I just gave will also solve Tosa's number one's question. That's what I meant, it just gets revisited. Namely, instead of saying that there is, they're the same, there's no discrepancy, because as far as the Yankov, but maybe there's something else to say. And that is that the makor of maybe that's the other way, I guess. Once you have two psukim, let's say, in Trumas and Maestros and Chala, I'm sorry, once you have, then you can bundle them. Once that proves that Akum and Hektesh are the same, then you can bundle them here too. In one. So there's a discrepancy, but the discrepancy is due to, you know, well, the identifying the source and its application. Just as opposite, right? Kivshaso, lo kivshaso, the makor is here. And Gavoa and Akum, the makor is there. But there are Rishonim who disagree. On both of the Tosas Shabbos, Alatar, on the first Tosas, says, well, maybe there's a difference between Trumos and Maestros and Chala and Bayor Bayi Matzah. The difference between Isurim and the Peturim from the mitzvah of Parsha Trumos and Maestros and Chala. So we'll look at that. If you get a chance, by the way, just look, we're going to stop literally in a minute. But look at the Mishnah and Chala, just very quickly. Gimel Vav, Rabbi Akiva. And if and the Rash there quotes the Yerushalmi. Let's talk about it for a minute. On the second Tosas, you have a bunch of Yerushalmis. There's, I told you to look at the end of the Balamar. Anybody get there? No. Okay, so look at the end of the Balamar. I'm not going to give it away. It's such a good Balamar. It'd be criminal, you know, to just, you know, take away your joy, you know. So look at the Balamar. But of course, the question is, like the assumption of these questions is that the nature of the Ptur, Akum, and Gavoa is the same in Vayuah as it is in Trumas and Maestros and Chala. It's not even clear that Trumas and Maestros and Chala and Rishis and Gez are the same. Never mind, also by you. So another answer to all these questions would be, it's very meduyak, these discrepancies, and they highlight different kafkos, going back to the Ramban and the Iri and other Rishonim issue. You know, are we talking about the absence of bailos? Because you need to be a bailam in order to violate by Rabbi Yitzhak. And shalachem mishon gavoa means that there's no bailam. But who are the in other cases of no bailam? And therefore, Akum and Gavoa also work exactly the same way. There's no yichus to Akum and Gavoa. The yichus is the absence of bailos. Or is it Hafka, a Ptur? In which case, Akum and Gavoa might be different from each other. In which case, you might distinguish between different categories of Akum. Right? Also, of course, in light of, what are you going to say about Hapka? What are you going to say about Maskil and Soker? Mokar and Lokeach? Or Stam Yisrael and Yisrael? All these are going to be on the table. And does any of this also connect to what we've been discussing, which is, might there be a difference between Bayura and Bayimatze? Right? Is the point here more about your personal encounter with Chametz, maybe even on Pesach, or more about objectively your ownership or your rishus, the presence of Chametz, maybe the, you know, preparation for these days, etc. So that, I want to pursue that with the specifics going forward. And the other Rishonim that I gave you, and then I'll give you more to look at. So Sunday is live, and Sunday will be here. Okay, stop here.